Thank you, Eric. Good morning. I'm honored to be here today. It takes such a strength and grace to take the grief I know you and Adrian deal with each day and use the loss of your son, Eric, as a catalyst for good. You honor him every day through the lives that you are saving. I'm inspired by the work you're doing and hope you know that my husband and his entire administration are committed to fighting the opioid epidemic. As the worst drug crisis in American history, his administration has declared it a public health emergency, and there are several agencies working alongside the White House to educate and provide services for those affected. I'm proud to be joined today by Secretary Azar with the Department of Health and Human Services and Secretary Nielsen with the Department of Homeland Security. Together with all of you, I know we can make a real difference and save lives. When I took on opioid abuse as one of my pillars of my initiative, Be Best, I did it with the goal of helping children of all ages. I have visited several hospitals and facilities that are dedicated to helping all who have been affected by this disease, including people who are addicted, babies born addicted, and families coping with addiction of a loved one. What has struck me with each visit is how this epidemic has touched so many people, whether it is because of personal use or that of family members, friends, co-workers, or neighbors. Opioid addiction is an illness that has truly taken hold of our country. According to the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, more than 130 people in the United States die each day due to overdosing on opioids. In 2017, those overdoses accounted for more than 72,000 deaths, more than any previous year on record. And in 2016, an estimated 40% of opioid deaths involved a prescription drug. My focus through Be Best has mainly been a neonatal absence syndrome, which are conditions that occur when a baby withdraws from the drugs it was exposed to during pregnancy. But when I was invited to participate in today's town hall, I saw it as an opportunity to speak with all of you as you enter into such a critical stage of your lives. The independence that comes with being a young adult can be exciting, but also overwhelming. Most of you are living on your own for the first time. You may be responsible for paying some of your own bills, getting to and from class every day, managing your homework, and I'm sure many of you also have jobs or extracurricular activities. And while I bet no one here will want to admit it, I imagine some of you have or will be experiencing situations with drugs or alcohol. I know college is a time to build your independence, experience things on your terms, and make decisions on your own behalf. I'm here to remind you that some of those decisions, thought they may seem minor at the time, could negatively impact you for the rest of your lives. I'm here speaking to you in my official capacity as First Lady, but I want you to know I'm also here as a mother. But rather than lecture you about the dangers of drug abuse, as most mothers would and should, I'm going to tell you what I have learned in this past year, because I believe education and learning is key to making the right decisions on your own behalf. I have learned that addiction can begin with something as innocent as injury. It could be a sports injury or from some kind of an accident. I have spoken with families and seen many news reports that talk about young athletes or people injured in accidents who became hooked on opioids after being given a prescription for real pain. Tragically, many of those stories end with people who have later transitioned into using heroin and overdosing. In fact, data from the Department of Health Human Services shows that in 2016 and 2017, more than 17,000 deaths were attributed to overdosing on commonly prescribed drugs. I have learned that many people who become addicted to drugs are too ashamed to ask for help. I have also learned that addiction is a disease, and like any illness, people need and deserve treatment. We must commit to removing the stigma of shame that comes with addiction and helping change public opinion so that people find evidence-based treatment before it's too late. I have learned that you have responsibility to yourself and also to those around you who may be struggling. While you may never personally become addicted, the chances of you knowing someone who struggles with it are very high. And if you or someone you know needs help, you need to be brave enough to ask or strong enough to stand with them as they fight through the disease. You need to be educated enough to know the signs of addiction and also secure enough to talk about it and keep talking about it until help arrives. Now that you know what I have learned, I want to close by telling you what I believe. I believe in the power of all of you. If even one of you lives here today and talks to a friend or family member about the potential to end this crisis, then we all succeeded. I believe that as our next generation, you have the potential to not just reduce, but eliminate the statistics I mentioned earlier. I also believe you have the capacity to not think of these terms of statistics, but to think of this as a human story and an opportunity to save lives. I believe in your unending potential to change our world for the better. I want to once again thank Eric Bolling for having me here today, and to both he and his wife, Adrienne, for their strength and bravery in the face of a sudden loss and grief. I look forward to hearing from the rest of today's guests and also from some of you in the audience today. I also want to thank each of you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be here, and of course, President Jerry Falwell and Liberty University for hosting such an important and potentially life-saving event. God bless you all, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here, First Lady. I mean, it's amazing to have you join this opioid fight. I want to get to some of the initiatives that you're talking about, but I need to tell this story very quickly. As I said, September 8th of 2017, we got that phone call. It was about 10:30 at night. And next morning, we flew to Colorado, University of Colorado, where my son was going to school. And the phone rang while I'm sitting with our family doctor there. And it was President Trump calling, and he was with Melania Trump, the First Lady. And he said, I can't imagine what you're going through, but whatever you need, we'll take care of it. And I was in such a state, I couldn't even really understand what was going on. It was about, I guess, a month or so later, it was Thanksgiving, and the phone rang again as we're about to go sit down at that Thanksgiving table with the empty chair, the proverbial empty chair. And I knew it was going to be a disaster. The family had tears already. Phone rings again, and it's President Trump who says, I'm standing here with my wife, Melania, and we just wanted to let you know we're thinking about you on a holiday. And so at that moment, I realized how much empathy and compassion you have for this struggle, for this fight. So I want to thank you. Can we give a big round of applause for the First Lady on that? Thank you for that empathy. So just so you know, this is something that means a lot to the First Family. It really does. So can we talk a little bit about how opioids became one of your signature initiatives?
Well, I have three pillars in my Be Best initiatives, and one of them is opioid addiction. I think it's very important that we educate next generation. Yep. Here you are. And very important we educate them and tell them how dangerous the drugs are and can be, and that it really can mess you up for the rest of your life.
Well, so you initially had said that you were reaching out to families of children addicted, born addicted to opioids, but I've noticed you visit some hospitals with young people addicted as well. What have you learned in this few weeks or few months that you've been really concentrating on opioids?
I visited many hospitals and facilities that young mothers had a baby with neonatal abstinence syndrome, and I learned a lot. And we need to be here for them to help them and give them the treatment. And once I was there, I met with so many families that they lost children or that they are opioid addicted themselves and they need help. I am here to shine the light and to talk about it, and I hope we could end this terrible epidemic that is going out in United States.
You know, I did a speech at CPAC last year, and after the speech, I was in the hallway and I was inundated with young people. Not so much older people, but young people who came up and told their story. I'm worried about my brother, or my best friend passed away, or I've been clean for 5 or 6 months and I'm not sure if I'm going to make it. I'm shocked, and are you as shocked, and is the president as shocked at how many, you know, how focused it is on the younger generation who's being affected and afflicted by the opioid crisis?
Yes, because I think it's nowadays it's much easier to get the drugs, mm-hmm. and they prescribe sometimes too many drugs at once. Mm-hmm. And you could see also sometimes, you know, it's a black market and it's very dangerous.
Yeah, many, many, many prongs, many tentacles to that. To that opioid octopus. Allow me to pivot a little bit. The media, this is a very important issue, topic, the opioids. How has the media treated you with respect to this?
Well, I would like that they focus more on what we are doing and what we want to achieve and spread awareness. It's very important for a whole country and for the whole world.
Yeah, and this is something that potentially could save thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives just by you showing up and having this discussion with these young people, creating awareness. Yet it seems like you don't get the credit that other first ladies may get. Listen, I think you could be one of the most influential first ladies, maybe since Nancy Reagan. So this is a really important step. Do you get the credit in the media?
Well, they would like to portray different stories and focus on different unimportant stuff, really. And I'm here to shine the light on important stuff and talk about the things that I can help next generation, our children, and to grow up in young adults and later to adults and be responsible in their own lives.
Let me point something out, and yeah. So here you are talking about opioids, feasibly to several million people, not just here, but also will be broadcast throughout the Sinclair system, talking about opioids and getting the message out. And what is the media? I'm telling you, I can't believe this. What are they hung up on with the First Lady right now? The red Christmas trees in the White House. Now, I will tell you, on the flight over here, my wife said, I want a red Christmas tree in my house now, too. Are we kidding? This is what they worry about when lives could be saved.
We are in 21st century and everybody has a different taste. I think they look fantastic. I hope everybody will come over and visit it. In real life, they look even more beautiful, and you're all very welcome to visit the White House, the People's House.
See that? See that? Everyone's invited. The People's House. So you know my story with my wife and the loss of our beloved Eric Chase. Your mom, DeBaron, do you have this discussion with him? Is he at the age that you do this?
I discuss with him. I teach him what is right, what is wrong. And I will always tell him that drugs, they could be very dangerous and they could mess up your mind and body. And to love yourself more than you love drugs.
Mm-hmm. Very good. That's a very good point. What does he respond? Like when that interaction happens, how does he respond to you?
You know, he's that age that sometimes you feel the children, they don't listen, but they listen.
Yeah.
They remember everything what you tell them, because I could hear it from his friends and people that I meet when he talks to them. He is very aware. And I hope he follows what I teach him.
So that brings me to one of the other, let's call it pillars or prongs of your initiative, and which would be social media and bullying. How do you handle that? Where are you on that scale of, do you monitor what he's doing on social media? Do you not get involved? As a parent, I recall this, there was a delicate balance between not wanting to be too overbearing as a parent, but also not wanting to close your eyes to some dangers.
He doesn't have a social media yet. He's not interested in it. He's all into sport. So he's a great athlete. I teach him to be responsible and treat people with respect and kindness. And that's very important for me. And I know when I started with Be Best and with social media initiative that I will be criticized. But I will do what is right for the next generation, and to be focused on helping how to use it and how much to use it, the social media. That's very important for me. So next generation can be respectful and kind.
Are you listening?
And also, sometimes you need to fight back. I'm sorry.
Are you listening? All right. They want me to go to some audience questions, but I have to ask these first. I got at the First Lady. We all want to know. So a typical night in the White House, President Trump is finished with the work for the day. He comes down, they turn on the TV and sit around and just watch some TV together. What's that night like? What's the White House like at night?
We are very, very busy. We have our own schedules. I'm very busy. He's very busy. In the evenings, we got together, try to have a dinner together, and just talk what's happened through the day.
Yeah.
Then go on with the schedule that we need to do.
So,
you're First Lady, it's no free time.
No free time? Well, that was my next question. You have a staff of chefs and people who are preparing meals for your family. Do you ever say, hey, you got the night off? Let me get in there and get my hands dirty and maybe make a casserole or something?
Not really, but... we can do that maybe in the future when I'm a little bit less busy.
Second term. We'll do that in second term, right? One question I have to ask you. If you were to write an autobiography, what's it about? What's the title? What's it about?
I don't have a title yet. I didn't even think about it. I just think I could have many books, what's going on in my life. So I don't think that about yet. I want to be focused on what I can do and help the people of United States and around the world, and that is my priority.
Very good, very good. Okay, let's get some questions. Your questions, your future, your questions, right? First question is from Mary Alice. Oh, okay. It's not Mary Alice. You Christian?
Yes, sir.
First question will be from Christian. Go ahead, Christian.
Hi, Madam First Lady. Thank you so much for coming today. You touched on speaking with Barron about opioid addiction. As a mother yourself and leading example to countless mothers in the country, what kind of advice would you give to other moms in the way that they should approach a conversation with their kids about opioid addiction?
I think the education is the most important, and talk with the children and see what's going on in their life, who their friends are. Very important to stay on top of them so they don't go in the wrong direction. That can happen very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll take another audience question. Is this Alex?
Yes, it is.
Go ahead, Alex.
Thank you so much for being here today. My name is Alex. You've been quoted saying, if you're fighting addiction, you should not be ashamed. What are some other ways we can show compassion to those who are fighting drug addiction?
We need support. We need to support people who are addicted and to get rid of stigma that comes with opioid addiction. We need to be there for them. We need to support them and talk to them, of course, to get professional help as well. To encourage them and see in themselves their positive character and what they could do with themselves in positive way. But to be there for them and love them and whenever they need you.
Okay, Mary Alice has a question.
Thank you so much for coming to speak to us. My name is Mary Alice, and my question is, why did you first choose to focus on the issue of opioid abuse, specifically babies that are born addicted?
We need to educate and teach young mothers how dangerous the drugs are. While you're pregnant and if you use drugs, your baby could be born with neonatal abstinence syndrome. And it's a lot of challenges later on when they grow up. So education, very important to young women, to young men, so they know later in life how to handle it.
Great questions, and I think one of the most important things we have going on here is creating awareness and removing the stigma of opioid addiction and use and abuse. And I think because we have the First Lady here, we're going to really, really start to remove that stigma and save some lives. We're fortunate because First Lady's sticking around, and we have a lot more coming up. Don't go away. Coming back, First Lady Melania Trump, thank you so much for staying with us for another segment. We have Alex Azar, the Health and Human Services Cabinet Secretary. We have Kirstjen Nielsen, the Department of Homeland Security Cabinet Secretary. Where in the world do you get the First Lady and two Cabinet Secretaries on one stage, fighting one issue? This is amazing. Okay, a big round of applause for these guys. Thank you. Thank you all. Quick story. When we talked about doing this opioid event here at Liberty University, I said to Jerry Falwell and Becky, I said, would you mind if I invited the First Lady? And they said that would be phenomenal. I made one phone call, guys, one phone call. And the First Lady was gracious enough to say, yes, absolutely, got involved. I made one phone call. HHS Secretary said, yes, I want to get involved. I made one phone call. DHS said, yes, I want to get involved. This is a crisis that these people truly, truly do care about. Mr. Secretary, let's talk a little bit about, you come from a pharmaceutical background. Talk to us a little bit about what the First Lady mentioned of over-prescribing availability of opioids on the U.S. market.
Well, this is one of the things I want to make sure all of you who are here today and who are in the audience know is just as the First Lady said, how easy it is to become addicted to opioids. You may have an image in your head of somebody like the 1970s image of opioid addiction. That's not what we're dealing with today. The majority of people who become addicted to opioids today were prescribed a legal painkiller for wisdom teeth, for a knee surgery, something like that, and they were prescribed too many, or they took too many. They became addicted for reasons we don't understand. Somebody may take 9 days of them and become addicted, and another person is perfectly fine, and we don't know why that is. You've got to be extremely careful. You've got to seek help if you see yourself or a loved one getting into that situation, because that's how folks are getting into this trap, is through these legal opioids initially. The great news is, under the president's leadership, since January of 2017, legal opioid prescribing is down over 23%, and the what we call the morphine milligram equivalents is down 28%.
Can you expand on that a little bit? How does that work?
So it just, what it means is fewer of these pills are getting prescribed by doctors now. Fewer of those pills getting prescribed means fewer of you are going to have the chance to become trapped in this cycle of addiction. And so that's a huge accomplishment. The president committed that by the end of his term, we'd reduce that by a third, and he's already delivered 23% reduction.
So one of the other issues that I think is very, very important in tackling this epidemic is not only the availability, but the awareness side as well. Now, talk to us. There's I was at a bill signing with the First Lady and the President where $6 billion was appropriated for, among other things, awareness. How are you getting the word out on awareness and recovery and addiction help?
So we've got ads out, I hope you've seen them, that frankly ought to scare you about the risks of opioid addiction, the risks of how you can fall into this trap. The other thing that we're trying to make sure folks understand, and the First Lady said this in her remarks, is to get rid of the stigma around opioid addiction. This addiction is not a moral failing. It is a medical issue, and there are medical ways that we can help bring you out of it, and it might even be a lifetime of recovery, but there are ways we can help you. And so it's getting the word out there that medication-assisted treatment and other forms of therapy are ways that we can help you recover. They're available. You just need to seek the help.
All right, very good. Madam Secretary, talk to us a little bit about your Department of Homeland Security involved in the border. There are a lot of illegal drugs, illicit drugs coming across the border. For me, close to home, fentanyl. Fentanyl is what killed my son. Coming from China, likely a lot of it comes through our southern border. What are we doing to stop that?
So first I just want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank Liberty University for hosting us. It's amazing. And President Falwell and Eric, thank you for pulling all of us together for this very important conversation. At DHS, we're trying to prevent all of the illicit opioids from getting into the country. So we do that at the source with agreements with our international allies. We do that at the border. We do that at sea with the Coast Guard. We do that at the border with Customs and Border Protection. And we do that through the airports with the Transportation Security Administration. What Eric mentioned, unfortunately, is the most difficult part to get at, perhaps, which is that much of the fentanyl is still coming from China through the mail. So the president, under his leadership, signed legislation earlier this year, the STOP Act, which for the first time will give every mail carrier, the U.S. Post Office included, the ability to pre-screen international shipments so that the Department of Homeland Security can identify the illicit drugs. So we are making progress. To give you a perspective, about a pound of fentanyl can cause 150,000 deaths. That's how fatal fentanyl is. So at the Department of Homeland Security under this president, we went from interdicting about 440 pounds at the border. We're now well over 1,700. The Coast Guard brings in tons of opioids every time they come back to port. And then at the mail facilities, we have all of our canine teams trained. Canines are actually quite good at detecting fentanyl. And so every single location where we sort mail has a team of dogs there that are there to protect you from opioids coming into our country.
First Lady, are you shocked by the amount of interest and money that's being, the assets that are being thrown at this? I mean, I think this is the first time in history any administration has spent this amount of time, money, and focus on something so deadly. By the way, can we agree that this is the worst national health crisis in the history of America?
Yes, it is the worst crisis, and I think in the past years we didn't talk much about it, and it came so far that now we really need to step up.
Secretary, 133 people per day die of a drug overdose, primarily fentanyl or opioids, I'm sorry. That's like flying a 737 into a mountain every single day and everyone on board dying, and the focus on mostly young people. Can you give us an idea of the breakdown of who are the overdosing people? What's the demographic?
Well, the demographic is everybody. We've got about 12,000 in this arena right now. I hate to say it, but here in Lynchburg, that means one person will die of opioid overdose in this room every year. One person here will die every year in this group. So 133 Americans die every single day of opioid overdose. Now, largely, it's fentanyl. What happens is somebody gets trapped in the cycle of addiction from a legal opioid. They get cut off eventually. They then switch to street legal opioids, street heroin, street fentanyl. They may switch to cocaine. They'll then eventually get somehow a fentanyl in their heroin, fentanyl in their cocaine, fentanyl in a street antidepressant, something like that.
Or Xanax, in the case of my son.
Or yeah. Xanax. Fentanyl in a street Xanax. And that's the overdose. And sometimes, tragically, what happens is they'll go into recovery, and they'll get clean, and they'll come out, and they'll relapse into using opioids again. But their body has lost the tolerance, but they go back to using the level of opioid they were using before they went into treatment, and they die from overdose from that. That's why it's been so important that we've gotten overdose-reducing drugs out there. Over 250% increase in the supply of opioid-reducing drugs out on the street, in first responders and elsewhere since
Narcon.
The president took
Narcon
office.
is a lifesaver, guys.
Exactly.
Secretary, there's a big concern among the public, people I speak to, that, yes, you're doing what you need to do with the U.S. Postal Service, but what about the others? What about FedEx? What about UPS? What about the other private carriers that in the past may have been carrying drugs, even if they didn't know it, knowingly or unknowingly? What are you doing to stop some of that?
Yes, so we actually have something at the department called the National Targeting Center. And what we do there is we gather as much information as we can about shipments, cargo shipments, mail shipments in advance from our international partners, the shippers themselves. And then that helps us target patterns that seem off. Right, that cause us to question what is in the package, who is it being sent to. For example, if we see a tremendous amount of packages suddenly going from one location in China to a very small town in rural America, there's a question there, what could be in the packages. So it helps us to target and understand. I would also say under the leadership of the President and the First Lady, we have for the first time an agreement with China to begin to get the advanced information from China.
Are they working with us?
They are. They can do more. The President is working with them to assure that they do more, but this is the first time that they've agreed to provide that advanced information so that we can target better and understand what's in the package.
The President didn't negotiate a tariff on the heels of working with us on their fentanyl production. All right, let's take a couple questions from our awesome student body audience here. It's Town Hall, after all. Can you tell us your name?
Hi, my name is Alana Rivera. Thank you for being here with us this morning. This topic is really close to my heart because my grandfather was a heroin addict for 12 years, and he went through a lot of different programs and never found help until he came through a faith-based program. And from that transformation, he decided to start another one and has helped over 20,000 people in the last 50 years. But we've seen administration change so much over the last 50 years where some people have been...
The question is?
Oh, the question is... Is there anything that we can do as faith-based programs to get better partnership with the government?
You want to take that, Secretary?
Sure. Alana, thank you for what you and your grandfather do to help people who need recovery. This president is deeply committed to the role of faith-based organizations, not just in the opioid crisis, but throughout how we deliver services to our people. And, for instance, in 2018, we are putting out $2 billion of grants for the opioid crisis. $1 billion of that can be used by states and given to faith-based organizations like yours to help deliver recovery and treatment.
Great, great. Take one more audience question, if I can. What's your name?
My name is Derek. Good morning, Secretary Azar, for being here. My question is, so if I have a family member or a friend who is struggling with opioids, and often their first question to getting help is, I might go to jail. What are some resources and some ways that I can actually help them?
Well, first, I'd ask President Falwell to confirm this, but my understanding is here at Liberty, you basically have the ability to come forward and self-report without any fear of discipline if you feel that you're at risk from alcohol or drug addiction. And so that would be a step one, is seeking out any administrator here at Liberty, and they'll protect your privacy and get into recovery. The other is, if you've got a friend or colleague and you need help, 1-800-662-HELP, H-E-L-P, is the substance abuse hotline that we have at HHS, and we can direct you to local treatment and recovery services in your area.